Street Songs by Steve Martland, performed at Cadogan Hall by Tenebrae and the marimba player Rob Farrer, conducted by Nigel Short. And that piece ended last Monday's London-themed Proms Chamber Music recital. The presenter was Clemency Burton-Hill. This is BBC Radio 3. Coming up at 4:30, Clemency Burton-Hill returns with another programme in our New Generation Artist series. But now, from the stage of the Cadogan Hall here in London, here's Christopher Cook with the BBC Proms Saturday Matinee.
In today's Proms Saturday Matinee, an afternoon of French Baroque music, Sir Roger Maren-Orrington conducts Les 24 Violons du Roi, a recreation of what is probably the first ever professional orchestra. The original 24 violins of the King was founded by Louis XIII in 1626. And here at Cadogan Hall, their modern counterparts, a collaboration between the Royal College of Music and the Paris and Orsay Conservatoire, are going to play music by Desmarais, Marais, Comprat and Lalande. Much of this music was written for Louis XIV, that most musical of French monarchs. As a young man in the 1650s, Louis was irresistibly drawn to the stage and appeared regularly in ballets with his favourite composer, Jean-Baptiste Lully. Indeed, when Louis became the undisputed master of France, Lully was given the top musical job at court. Tirelessly ambitious, he set about consolidating his position as France's foremost composer. And it was his operas that earned him his reputation. French operas, tragédies lyriques, that turned their back on foreign models imported from Italy, and which blended opera and ballet into a single entertainment. Armide was Lully's last but one work for the stage, and it was given its first performance at the Palais Royal in Paris in 1686. And Les 24 Violons du Roi, led by Patrick Cohen-Akindin, is going to play a suite of ballet music from Armide, five movements, beginning with the overture to the opera and concluding with a passacaille. The 24 Violons of the King are conducted by Roger Norrington. Les 24 violons du roi had just played a suite of music from Jean-Baptiste Lully's opera Armide, and the orchestra was conducted by Sir Roger Norrington, and I'm joined now by Sir Roger. Roger, how did the original 24 violons du roi come about?
Well, it's much earlier than we think. We think of Lully and Louis XIV, but there was a violon du roi already in 1570, when in England we were still scratching away at viol da gambas, and we hadn't really got hold of the violin from Italy yet. But already in 1570, they sent to Cremona, to Amati, to have a set of violins made, the new Italian style, not like the fretted viols. And so it's as early as that, there was a group of these different instruments. They were set up, as you said, around 1620 as the violon, the 24 violons du roi. First of all, 22, then 23, then 24. Then finally, when Lully took over in 1653 under Louis XIV, there were actually 25 because Lully was leading. He was the boss, and he led from the violin, as we did at earlier concerts before I was allowed on the scene by Patrick. That's how it should really be done. The conductor should probably only be hitting a staff or on the ground or his foot, whichever is nearer. So it was all that time, and then he went on for another 100 years. So it was kind of 200 years of violon du roi.
Roger, thank you very much indeed. We're going to talk again a little later about the instruments that the orchestra are playing. But we might continue with some music. Sorceresses like Armide, who we've just heard, cast a very special spell, I think, over Baroque composers. Apart from staging the exotic and perhaps the forbidden too, it was an opportunity for all manner of special musical effects, enchantments, spells and transformations. 8 years after Lully had premiered his Armide, one of his followers, Henri Desmarais, produced Circe, the witch who in Homer's Odyssey turns Odysseus and his men into swine after they've gorged themselves in a feast on her magical island. As a young man, Desmarais began writing for the stage and might have had a happier career in the theatre had he not been sentenced to death for eloping with a powerful tax collector's daughter. There must be a moral there somewhere. For most of the remaining 40 years of his life, the composer was in exile, in Spain first, then Lorraine and Lunéville, far removed from the musical heart of French opera in Paris. Les violons du roi are going to play 5 movements from Circe, conducted by Roger Norrington.
Thank you.
Two preludes, a pair of minuets, and a gigue from Henri Desmarais' opera Circe. Roger Norrington conducted Les 24 Violins du Roi. And I'm joined again now by Roger Norrington. Roger, tell me a little bit about the instruments in the orchestra, but we might begin with why 24 violins?
Yes, microphone. Well, there were 24 because they worked out that was the balance they wanted. Six on the top line, which is called the dessus de violon, and six basses, which are like large cellos today. They're called basse de violon. And in between are three different sizes of violas. It's what we would call them. They call them the haute contre, the taille, and the cant, the fifth instrument. And those of you who are in the hall, as opposed to the millions listening outside, can see that the violin is smaller than, the dessus is smaller than a modern violin. So each instrument is not like today. And then the haute contre, somebody hold up an haute contre. This is a children's program after all. And that's smaller than a viola. Then the taille is pretty much like a viola. And then you get this monster at the end. All hold all of them up. It's a sort of small cello, but which you hold under your neck with a strap to keep it up. And that bridges the gap between the viola and the cello in the modern orchestra. There is no double bass, no 16-foot instrument. So these instruments have all been reconceived, really, because none of the old ones survived, because by 1760, when the violins, modern violin was coming into France, they just burnt them on the fire. They didn't need them anymore. But it was only because Patrick, our esteemed leader, had the he had the idea 4 or 5 years ago to ask the luthier, the makers, to make a couple of these. And when the Centre Musique Baroque de Versailles saw them, they said, yes, let's make the whole lot. So first of all, they made the 12 violas, and we tried those out in a couple of years ago. And now we've got six, the dessus. And the bows were all made by Philip Brown in Newbury, my hometown.
So that was nice. Philip is here in the audience with us.
Hello, thank you, Philip. Well done. You can see these bows are, the audience at home can see that the bows are absurdly small. You keep running off the end if you're a modern violinist. But that's how they were, and then they get steadily bigger as you go up. So it's an amazing thing. This is the first time they've been heard for 200 years.
And we also have woodwinds too. It isn't just the violins, of course.
Yes. I mean, they're not of any importance at all.
I think you've just lost half your orchestra, Sir Roger.
Well, yes, the score shows that from time to time flutes play. There's a beautiful Baroque flutes, and that from time to time oboes play, and a little bit later some trumpets. So there were these additional. So we actually have 41 people on the stage. Well, if you think that when this orchestra was disbanded, Haydn's orchestra was only 14 for 30 years in Esterhaza, that shows that this was a pretty big orchestra in Europe at that time.
We should have some more music now, I think.
If we must.
And indeed, the trumpets have crept on to join us. Roger, thank you very much indeed. Desmarais' father was a soldier, Lully, the son of an Italian peasant, and Marat Marais was born into a shoemaker's family. To be gifted musically was undoubtedly a passport to social success and financial rewards in Louis XIV's France. Marais, best known now as a master of the bass viol, had played in Lully's opera orchestra. Was introduced by his mentor to the court, where in 1679 he was appointed an ordinaire of the Musique de la Chambre du Roi. It was Lully who trained Marais as a composer, so we shouldn't be surprised that the younger man turned his hand to opera, composing four tragédies en musique in the manner of his master. Marais' second opera was a version of the story of Ariadne, abandoned by the faithless Athenian prince Theseus on the island of Naxos, where she's rescued, of course, by the young god Bacchus. Les Violins du Roi, conducted by Roger Norrington, are going to play the overture to Ariadne et Bacchus and six further dance movements from the opera, ending with a chaconne. Thank you. Le 24 Violins du Roi, conducted by Roger Norton, has just played seven movements from Mahler's opera Ariane et Bacchus. The island of Naxos was indeed full of dance sounds and sweet airs that gave delight. Roger, how do you set about discovering, deciding upon a style to perform this music?
Yes, it's quite complicated. Everything at Versailles was meant to be difficult. I think that was part of Louis XIV's plan to make things so difficult for the aristocracy that they couldn't hatch any more plots against him as they had when he was young. So he made life extremely complicated. They all had to move out of Paris and find horrible rooms in Versailles with rats running around the corridors and building works going on for about 40 years. And so they made the music as difficult as possible as well. Not only are there lots of these decorations, the poggiaturas, where you have to lean for a long time before twiddling at the end of them, and then the other little sliding decorations that they have. But also, they played, as you can hear, almost all the notes unequally, notes inégal. Jazz players, of course, do that, you know, quite naturally. Da 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 da. That was probably written da 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 da, but they swing it. And in Lully's time, they swung the music. So they all played everything unequally. So if foreigners came to try and join in, they didn't know how to do it.
Do we have some sense from perhaps published manuals, from reports about style?
Yes, we've got a tremendous amount of, especially from foreigners trying to learn. Like the most famous one is Muffat, a German violinist who came and played at the court for several years, and he wrote a long treatise on how to do it. Thank goodness it helps us understand this very difficult music.
Chaconne, Passacaglia, the familiar sounds to those of us who know English music at the end of the 17th century, did in fact the influence of Lully and his contemporaries of the musicians at the court of Louis XIV travel?
Well, all important monarchs in Europe wanted an orchestra like the 24 Violons, just as they wanted a palace like Versailles. Some succeeded and others didn't. But one person who really brought home the bacon was Charles II. Because he was at the court for several years during the protectorate. And when he came back, he wanted a 24 violins, so he set up his own. And of course, when you hear this music, you hear Purcell, don't you? That's our reference point. Purcell writes this music beautifully, or even better. he quickly learned the French style, as well as the Italian style. So we understand the music quite well from that point of view.
I should remind you that half of your orchestra are indeed French, so we...
Don't worry, they don't understand English.
Roger Norrington, thank you very much indeed. Music now by André Compras, a church composer with an irresistible itch to write for the theatre. Indeed, when he was appointed maître de musique at Notre-Dame in Paris in 1694, he struggled to keep his life in the theatre a deep secret from the conservative canons of the cathedral. But as one biographer records, the lure of the stage disturbed the execution of his ecclesiastical duties. Compras pioneered a new kind of opera, opera ballet, with a series now of self-contained acts, each with its own characters and plot. Out went worthy gods and ancient heroes, and on came love-starred ladies and teasing soubrettes. Compras describes his own musical style as a blend of French delicatesse and Italian vivacité. Compras' biggest hit was Tancrede, given its first performance in 1702. And Les 24 Violons du Roi, conducted by Roger Norrington, is going to play a suite of six dance movements from Compras' opera ballet Tancrede. After a minuet, Gigue, then Air des Amazones, a march, Sarabande, Rondo, and first to begin the prelude to the work. who can doubt the church's loss was all our gain? Roger Norrington conducted the 24 Violons du Roi in 7 movements from André Compre's opera ballet Tancred. Roger, it's clear that music was an essential part of life at Versailles.
Yeah, they had it all the time. Must have been quite tiresome, I should think. The oboe band played for the levee while Louis was getting up, surrounded by 200 or 300 people. Then the chamber group would play for breakfast. Another group would probably play for lunch. The Grand Band, as this was also called, sometimes played for the souper. And occasionally, apparently, the king encouraged them to get a little closer so he could hear the tunes better, but the ladies got scared of the timpani. So they had to be sent away again. But the violon were the kind of peak of the various groups in Versailles. They played less and less, but with more and more prestige. Clever idea. I think they may have been a bit of moonlighting in the other groups as well, but they were the sort of top group. So when a visiting royalty came, or the king came back from one of his many disastrous campaigns, they would dutifully play at the gates. So there was music, yes, all the time.
Is there a sense in which this is simply because Louis himself is fascinated by music, is actually very musical, or is it to do with his idea of power?
I think it was both. He was very, very keen on dancing, of course, and you can't dance without being interested in music, well, it's difficult. So he imagined himself, you know, the Sun King, and on a famous occasion, one opera ended at dawn as the sun came up. The king appeared as the sun. Astonishing conceit.
Actually, after yesterday and the appearance at the Olympic, maybe not so astonishing.
No, it might be in the next Olympic Games, yeah, probably. So, yeah, and so until 1760, this band went on. Then it was amalgamated with all the others. The instruments were burnt and the boring old modern orchestra came in. Shostakovich just round the corner.
We're going to end with a rather different sort of music than that which we've been hearing. We're going to hear music that was actually written for dinner, for supper. Tell us a little bit about this music for les soupers du roi.
Yes, in particular, the last movement, this last or series of movements which runs on, what's it called, the Grand Pièce Royale, is it? And Louis kept on asking for this piece, you know, every Thursday he wanted to hear this, or maybe Friday with the fish. But they played for only about half an hour at a time, but then they got on with the serious eating. But of course, the eating itself was surrounded by as many people as are in this audience now. They were all having a little look. More mustard? No. And then, what's that fishbone doing? It must have been very strange to be doing everything in public.
Roger Norrington, thank you very much indeed. Les 24 violons du roi. The 24 violins of the King end their prom Saturday matinee here at Cadogan Hall with a contemporary of Compre and Marais. It is said in his youth Lalonde cultivated the violin, but that when Lully rejected him as a player in his opera orchestra, he renounced the violin forever and took up the organ and harpsichord. He was, in his time, a notable church organist, and in time, he caught the ear of Louis XIV. Thereafter, de Lalonde seems to have become the apple of Louis's elderly musical eye. The king paid the composer's wedding expenses, and when Lalonde's two daughters and Louis's son, the Dauphin, all died of smallpox in 1711, this bond between the musician and his monarch became only closer. Indeed, de Lalonde was made so wealthy by his royal appointments and a series of pensions that he was one of the very few composers of the age who owned his own coach. Les 24 violons du roi, led this afternoon by Patrick Cohen-Aquinin, is going to play a selection of the musical numbers from the fifth suite of Lalonde's Symphonie pour les soupers du roi. There's an overture, two airs, and a grand pièce royale, as we've heard. The 24 violins of the king are, of course, conducted by Roger Norrington. musical bombouche after Music for Grand Dining by Michel Richard de Lalonde. Four movements from his fifth suite from Symphonie pour les Soupirs du Roi. Les 24 Valants du Roi were conducted here at Cadogan by Sir Roger Norrington.
And that was Christopher Cook at Cadogan Hall, and that concert will be repeated on Sunday, the 12th of August at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And you can hear it at any time over the next 7 days online. Just go to the Radio 3 homepage. Well, our prom this evening, live from the Royal Albert Hall, is given by the BBC Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Thomas Dausgaard. There's contemporary Danish music in the first part by Ruth Langor and Pelle Guthmansen Holmgren, and the German cellist Daniel Müller-Schott makes his prom debut as soloist in Shostakovich's first cello concerto. After the interval, we'll hear Tchaikovsky's Pathétique Symphony. You can hear that prom live here in the home of the BBC Proms. That's on BBC Radio 3, and that's 7:30 this evening.
The BBC World Roots Academy Late Night Prom.
At the age of 13, I decided to play the accordion because I saw this master on the accordion that came from Colombia. First time I saw that accordion, that sound, I said, wow, I really want to play that now.
20-year-old Colombian accordion player José Hernando Noguera and friends perform the traditional music of his Latin American heritage. The World Roots Academy Late Night Prom, live on BBC Radio 3 on Tuesday night at 10:15.
Trust me, they will dance to it.
Well, looking ahead, half an hour this afternoon at 5 o'clock, Alan Shipton will be here with Jazz Record Requests. But now it's just after 4:30 and time for the next in our series of recitals by Radio 3's New Generation Artists. The programme's presented by Clemency Burton-Hill.
Lovely to have you with us for this latest BBC New Generation Artists special. This afternoon we have the first of two programmes focusing on mezzo-soprano Clara Mudith, who has recently been elected an associate at the Royal Academy of Music and whose career in both opera and song has been steadily on the rise ever since she left her native Spain to study and settle in London. Well, Clara's here with me in the studio and we'll be talking a little later on, as well as hearing Debussy's great song cycle Chanson d'Habilitis. But first, two songs from Rinaldo Hahn, Si mes vers avaient des ailes and Trois jours de vendange. The pianist is Joseph Middleton.
Thank you.
Rinaldo Hahn's Trois Jours de Vendange, 3 days during the wine harvest. And before that we heard Si mes vers avaient des ailes, If My Verses Had Wings, performed by BBC New Generation artist Clara Muriz and pianist Joseph Middleton. Well, Clara's with me in the studio now, looking every bit as radiant as that voice we've just heard. Clara, thank you so much for joining us. I know you've only just flown into London. You've been on the New Generation Artist scheme a year now. Tell me about the highlights. What have you been up to?
I've enjoyed very much joining the scheme. During this last year, everything that you do with the BBC, actually, it's a highlight. Every concert, every broadcast is new repertoire, and that makes it very special, as well as collaborating with fantastic colleagues. Something that it comes to my mind right now, it's the first collaboration that I had with an orchestra through the scheme last September with the BBC Philharmonic in Manchester. I was singing with Ravel Sarasate, and I was singing with them as well, Monsalvage, 5 black songs. And afterwards, they invited me to record it with Chandos. And afterwards, we have done another second recording for Chandos of a Tudina program. It was very, very beautiful, the connection with the orchestra from the first minute.
Talking of your collaborations, I know you've worked a lot with pianist Joseph Middleton, and in particular, the French repertoire that we're hearing this afternoon. Why are you so drawn to these particular songs?
I think that in general I'm very drawn to French repertoire because I feel it quite close. I was born in San Sebastian, that is almost in the border with France, and somehow I keep the French repertoire very close to my heart. And in this particular occasion, the Bilitis songs, they are probably one of the highest points of art song in the Debussy style. In spite that I read the poems long time ago, the musical approach is quite new and it has been really, really beautiful to do it. I found them very mysterious and full of sensuality and eroticism and full of questions that are not answered.
Tell us what's happening throughout the cycle. It's relatively long, 9.5 minutes.
Well, there are only 3 songs, and they are very specific moments in the life of this girl. The first one, it's an awakening to sensuality and to attraction. The second one lies between dreams and reality, and it makes you doubt what is real and what is only just imagination. The third one is somehow very hard, in the way that it describes a situation that is extremely real and extremely sad, at the same time very delicate.
Well, let's hear all of that now. Debussy's Chanson de Bilitis, performed by BBC New Generation artist Clara Moritz and pianist Joseph Middleton.
Thank you.
BBC New Generation artist Clara Moodith performing Debussy's Chanson d'Habilitis, and she was accompanied by the pianist Joseph Middleton. Clara's in the studio with me now. Clara, I know you've worked a lot with Joseph Middleton over your time on the New Generation artist scheme. How important is it to find a pianist you can really relate and really work with?
It's the most important thing. I was very lucky to meet Joseph when we were still studying in the Royal Academy of Music, and we were paired to do a recital as winners of a competition that we enter separately, and since then we have worked together enormously, and it's a real pleasure. It's very, very important because art song is a dialogue between voice and piano, and of course it's a dialogue between artists.
As well as working on art song, I know you've got lots of other plans up your sleeve for your next year on the scheme. Tell us about what's on the horizon.
First thing that I have next year is a recording with the BBC Scottish that I'm really looking forward to, and it's a full programme, a full Rossini programme. It will be the cantata Giovanna d'Arco and then the final rondo of La Cenerentola, and I'm really looking forward to working with them.
What's your biggest ambition for the future? Because you've got obviously opera, art song, you've got all these things that you're capable of.
I try to keep my ambition to working with fantastic colleagues and exploring wonderful music and to make the instant count, to make the next step magical. That's what it really makes me very happy.
Well, Clara, thank you so much for joining me. We've still got a little bit of magic to come. This is Rinaldo Hahn's A Cloris.
New Generation Artist Programme was presented by Clemency Burton Hill.
On Radio 3 from the BBC Proms, two iconic American works.